Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
All right, we're going to begin the show today with a little bit different feel because I had some personal news that came out this week, and I wanted to share it on the podcast as well as the blog. So to start off, I'm just going to read some of the blog that I posted this week on Barstool to give some of you that don't actually read the site or follow me on Twitter, you just listen to the podcast, a little insight of what's going on. Over the last couple of weeks, I've had more and more people about this ask me about this, so I'm just going to go out right and say it. In 2011, I was arrested for aggravated assault on a police officer. The events of that day are the single greatest regrets of my life, and in 2011, I was 2 years removed from being meritorious promoted to my rank of staff sergeant. My career in the Marine Corps was at an all-time high, and I was a lead instructor at the Military Working Dog School at Lackland Air Force Base. Everything was going great. I had been married to my wife for about 3 years, and we were happy then, just like we're happy now. On a weekend, we decided to go to the river with some friends. I drank entirely too much. While we were on the banks of the river, a cop approached my wife, and I was told that we were on private property. The details of the entire exchange are dumb, but it basically boils down to the fact that I had drunkenly lost my flip-flops in the water and was using the bank to make it easier to spot them. We failed to follow the police officer's instructions to get into the water, so he verbally told us that he was placing us under arrest. When he put his hands on my wife, I hit him. I was drunk. I didn't think about it. I reacted. Once I hit him, we engaged, and I had him in a headlock. The next thing I know, I woke up in jail in a cell by myself. I thought that I had gotten arrested for a DUI. When I was booked into the jail, I was told that my bond was $125,000 and I had to pay $12,500 to get out on bond. I had lawyer fees, court costs, and a bunch of other shit to take care of as well. I was on active duty. I knew my career was over and my charges carried 5 years to the possibility of 99 in prison. I was embarrassed about my real name for a long time. I felt ashamed about what I did. I still do, and I still feel awful that I caused somebody's loved ones to get a call that their loved one was in a hospital. I feel terrible about that. In my Marine Corps days, I was a military police officer. The last thing I would have done or intended to do was to hurt another cop. I was one. I had a federal badge on my wallet the day that I was arrested. On Zero Blog 30, I talk openly and honestly about PTSD and its effect on people. After I got arrested, I started more treatment. I had gone to some treatment before everything happened, but my command made me go multiple times a week. My command and the court system were both lenient to me beyond a measure that I deserved. I still haven't talked about what happened because I'm embarrassed and ashamed. I still go to jail on holiday weekends for the foreseeable future I will. So if you Google my name and see multiple arrests, that's why. Part of my plea agreement was to serve 45 days over the course of the holiday weekends like Memorial Day or 4th of July. So when you see multiple arrests, each time I turn in myself over those weekends, those counts as new arrests. I could write 10,000 words about this and the effects that it's had on my life and my wife's life and the police officer's life, but I don't think it's best served for a blog. That's why I'm going to begin talking about it a little bit on the podcast. Now, there's a lot of things that have happened since I posted that blog on Monday morning. I don't normally pay a lot of attention to the feedback that I get about what I write, like whether it's jokes or whether it's military stuff. Like the stuff that I write on the blog is what I write on the blog. And like as the content creator, I decide what I write. This was a little bit different. I wanted to see what the general response was. And I think that people assumed, partly because of the way that I worded, that I was blaming what happened on PTSD. That's not the case. That wasn't my intention. If you interpret it that way, that's your right to interpret it that way, but that's not what I meant. I alone am responsible for my actions. PTSD was not responsible for my actions. I was responsible for my actions. I did what I did, and it's the greatest regret of my life. There was a time right after it happened that I was in deep, deep depression because my life went from being basically a model Marine, that I was the Marine that people told people to emulate themselves after, that I was on this fast track. People thought that I would be a fast tracker to be like Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, and I ruined my career on one afternoon, just flat out ruined it. I might have been able to stay in the Marine Corps despite having traumatic brain injury and PTSD if all of this stuff didn't happen. But no one knows because it did happen, and I feel terrible about it. I went through about a year of depression where I didn't want to leave my house. I didn't want to do anything because I was ashamed of what happened. I didn't drink for like 6 months, maybe even longer than that, because I wasn't sure if that was the issue. And I was going through treatment for PTSD, so I wanted to give that my full attention. There was a time during that period where I was incredibly angry about everything, like what happened to me in Iraq and all that stuff. And it's hard to talk about what actually happened without sounding like you're making excuses. I was an angry individual, a very, very angry individual, and alcohol definitely acerbated that anger. So I stopped drinking. Now, what I said about I don't take into account what a lot of people say, there's been a lot of people who brought up concerns, some publicly, some privately, whether it's through DMs or text messages, that maybe my alcohol issue is still a problem. And I think that they might be right. And I'm going, like, it's hard to say, like, because I live such a public persona, like, I have such a public life. People see me. They know what I do. Like, to say that I want to stop drinking, and then if somebody sees me a few months, few years down the road that I haven't done it, it's a difficult thing to put out there. I would like to stop drinking. That's my goal as of right now, is to stop drinking, because I think that feedback that I got from so many people was definitely eye-opening for me, that so many people thought that alcoholism was an issue for me. And I never thought that that would be an issue for me. It was an issue for my father. It was an issue for his father. It's been something that maybe it's passed down. Now, I don't think that I'm the same angry person. My wife would tell you that I'm not the angry person. My children would tell you that I'm not the angry person. People who have spent time with me and around me will tell you that I'm not an angry person. I was an angry person in 2011. I was an angry person in 2010, 2009. It's shocking to my Marines whenever my Marines see me on Barstool or listen to the podcast, the person that I am now compared to the person that I was. And partly is because I grew up a lot because I got treatment. Now, I don't say that to say that PTSD is the cause of my action. I, again, take full responsibility for what I did. I 100% do, and it will be a regret that I'll have for the remainder of my life. That being said, it's not something that I can continue to dwell over. The depression that I was in for a year after it happened because of what happened and all the events that surrounded it, where I had to spend so much money to make sure that I wasn't going to go to prison for the rest of my life, that to get out of jail. My family was eating hot dogs every single day for months, and our kids didn't understand why we went from living decent life to every single thing that we had to do, we had to pinch pennies. I can't go back to that state of depression. I won't go back to it because I feel like I've grown as a person, that I have what I talked about at the ball last week, where I feel like I have bloomed where I've planted. I was definitely given another chance that I didn't deserve by the court system, by my command. My command at the time could have kicked me out of the Marine Corps in 10 days, but they didn't. And they didn't because I think in part that I possibly can do some good now. And of course I didn't want to tell people right away. Imagine you sitting where you are, telling the entire world, hundreds of thousands of people, your darkest moment of your life. If you can hide that, you absolutely will. But I think one reason why people have gravitated to me is because I'm open about my family. I'm open about the things that I want to do in life. I post pictures of my wife. I post pictures of my kids. I let you in on every single aspect of my life. But there was one dark little bubble that I didn't want you to see. And when people started seeing it, it was terrifying to me because I didn't want people to think that I was different than who I've projected myself to be. And I don't think I am different than the person that I've projected myself to be. I hope that you will forgive me because I can't continue to go back and dwell on the things that happened. They happened, and I've got to move past it. And that's part of treatment. That's part of getting better, and that's part of growing as a person. Again, I want to say again, alcohol definitely was a contributing factor. I definitely have a problem with alcohol, and I definitely hope that you guys still listen and take the words that I say that I mean them. And I'm an open book now. Like, now you guys basically know everything that happened in my fucking life. And it stinks because I never wanted you to know that part, because nobody wants anyone to know the darkest aspects of their life. And that certainly on that day in 2011 was the darkest point in my life. We're going to move on. We're going to have the show starting now.
Do you want to drink wines like a millionaire? Do you hate paying huge amounts of money for Napa Cabernet? Me too, and that is why I buy my best wines from Cameron Hughes Wines. With Cameron Hughes Wine, you can find fantastic quality wine at everyday prices, like a $50 bottle for $15. Tell you what, that's a great deal. With Cameron Hughes Wine, you know you are getting the best deal always. Luxury wines at an affordable price. And the clincher? Mr. Cam, he guarantees all his wines. If you are unhappy with any bottle you buy from him, he will make it right. Find out why Cameron Hughes Wine is the preferred wine choice by informed and passionate wine lovers. I want you to try these wines because I've tried them, and they are delicious. And Cam is so convinced that you will enjoy them too that he wants to give our listeners an incredible deal, a great deal, to try these wines. So we're going to give you free shipping on three or more bottles and a free sommelier-grade corkscrew. You were concerned I might not be able to pronounce that word, but I proved you wrong. This is a great deal to try these already discounted wines, and you get free shipping, which is a huge savings. Wine is heavy and expensive to ship. So go to chwine.com. That is Charlie Hotel Whiskey India November Echo.com and use the code zero right now. That's chwine.com and enter code zero.
All right, well, welcome back to another edition of Zero Block Theory. That was my boy Connor. Rough little start to the episode this week, but we are moving on because that's what we have to in life. We're moving the fuck on. It is Veterans Day weekend. Connor, I know that you have a big weekend coming up. Tell us about it.
I do, but before I even get to that, let me say to you, chaps, happy birthday, buddy.
Thank you very much. This episode is airing, like, if you listen to it, the day is downloaded, on the Marine Corps birthday. We were born in 1775 in a little place called Tun Tavern. So we were born in a bar.
Yeah. Well, that's not surprising, and yeah. I like it. And we are grateful for the Marines who have been there at every battle and continue to be there for us each and every day. So thank you to the Marines, and a happy birthday to all you devil dogs out there. But, yes, I do have a great weekend coming up. When you think about what would be your ideal Veterans Day, we were talking about it, and I'm kind of really experiencing what would be an ideal Veterans Day for me. I'm going to be up at West Point. We have our last home game, so I'm going to be drinking, enjoying good food with my brothers, with a bunch of fellow veterans, watching college football on a brisk fall Saturday afternoon. The sun will be shining up at West Point, and I couldn't be more excited because you pretty much combined a ton of my favorite things into one day, and as a result, you get a happy cons. So I'm ecstatic for this weekend. What about you?
Yeah, man, I'm stoked, too. I'm heading up to Chicago tomorrow morning, Friday morning, to go hang out with some Marines at another ball that's going to be in Chicago, and it's going to be snowing. It's supposed to be snowing. I haven't seen snow, like, much in a while. Check the – it was going to be, like, on the water, I think, and 20 miles an hour wind, 27 degrees and snowing. Not really chapsy weather, but we'll give it a go.
No, not. Are you going to be properly dressed? You have
clothes ready to Dillard's. I have to go to Dillard's as soon as we got done because I have to get like a pea coat or something. I don't even know what to wear with like a suit. It's going to be ridiculous.
Well, yeah, I think a pea coat would work, but any sort of top coat would go well with a suit and just make sure it goes down to, you know, at least your knees so you can stay warm because, yeah, man, that Chicago weather, it'll get you and it'll bite you, right, coming off that
because I'm not too concerned about the cold. Like, I've done with cold. It's the cold, the crisp wind coming off the lake that is going to be a bitch when you're wearing suits pants. Like, if I was wearing jeans or something, I wouldn't be too concerned. But suits pants or trousers, if I may, are really thin. So I'm not digging that.
Yeah, you better bundle up. Maybe you should wear some – this might be unprecedented, but maybe you should wear some long johns. Are you a long johns guy underneath your suit pants?
I'm so naturally hot-natured. And
yeah.
I really believe that you dress for the majority of the place that you're going to be. Like, if you're going to be out on the 20-degree water or whatever all day, then, yeah, pack in the long johns, get the hand warmers and all that shit. But I would much rather be uncomfortable for the 20-minute commute that it's going to take me to get there than the rest of the night by being hot as fuck when I'm inside. Like, I'd much rather be cold in the cab and comfortable in the place than warm outside and hot as fuck inside.
Yeah, I completely agree. We're going to experience – the weather has started to change up here in New York City, and then when you get up to West Point and you're right on the banks of the Hudson. It's usually about 10 degrees colder. And we are expecting, I think, when we show up at 9 a.m., it's going to be about 20 degrees. So that is going to be a slap in the face that we have not experienced all season, but I'm looking forward to it. And I don't think anything could really dampen my spirits for this weekend.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to going to the Army-Navy game this year because I hope that it's cold as shit. Like, yeah. I've never really been to a cold weather game. Like, there was a game that happened, I think it was 2 years ago in the NFC playoffs where Minnesota played Seattle, and it was an outside game because Minnesota hadn't moved into their new stadium.
Right.
And it was, like, negative 10 degrees. It was so bad that I think it was Cam Chandler's, like, part of his finger. They almost had to amputate it.
I remember that. Like, yeah. Yeah.
That's the Blair Walsh game, right? I want to go to a game like that. What's that?
That was the Blair Walsh game?
Yeah, Blair Walsh game. Shout out to Blair Walsh for the brand. But he's like, I've always wanted to go to a game like that, whether it's late in the season at Lambeau or at Michigan, like for a late game there. I've always wanted to go to one of those games. Buffalo would be a great spot to go see a game like that.
Mm-hmm. Just see what kind of man you're made of. But yeah, I mean, it was a little chilly last year, but it was not to the point where you're like, oh my goodness, it is bitterly cold here. So we will see what happens when we head down to Philadelphia this year, because we've experienced some interesting weather for Army Navy games in Philadelphia before, and I would not be surprised if we get some snow or if we get some sleet or just.
But that's cold. An advantage for you guys with running a lot of option plays.
Absolutely.
And heavy on the run, the big time. Well, I guess Navy does it too.
Yeah, that's true. You know, it would just be a strictly ground game, but you know, we're playing well on the ground right now, and
two teams playing in the ground could go well, though, because it's going to be a lot shorter game. Like, you're going to have
true.
Like
that
a 2 hour
moving.
Game instead of like a 3.5 hour game.
Yeah, if that clock is moving, man, it doesn't really matter how cold it is because you're not going to be out there that long. And what's great about the Army-Navy game is professional stadium as opposed to some collegiate stadiums. You're definitely selling some beers, so, you know, you have some beers and you're warm and you're okay there in addition to dressing well.
And you have designated seats. Because I fucking hate bleacher seats, dude. Like, when we went to Texas, we went and watched the game at UT Austin.
Right.
That shit sucks. Whenever you're at a stadium that's bleacher seat, it's terrible. Because people act like you're the same size that humans were in 1870, and you're fucking not. Especially in Texas. The average Texan weighs like 260 pounds, and they're going to squish you into like 14-inch wide seats. So nobody can sit down. It's hot as fuck. Fuck going to UT Austin. That place is terrible.
And you got no...
I'm excited... Go ahead.
You got no backs on the bleachers either, which, you know, as you get older,
when
your back starts to hurt.
When you're losing, your team is losing, and you have no back support, everything becomes miserable.
Yes.
If you're winning, you're standing, so you don't care.
Exactly.
But if you're losing, you're like, oh, God. Yeah. Especially if you're getting blown out, like if you're a Jaguars fan like me. Except for this year, 5-3, baby. We're doing it. Our Jags are
making work. Making light work of the rest of the NFL right now at 5-3. You know, shout out Blake Bortles, Wikipedia Club. He is handling those boys down there very well.
Well, maybe. I think he's more managing the game himself. But hey, that's a lot better than having fucking 20 turnovers. I think he only has like 3 interceptions, and 2 of those are off of tips. I might have made those stacked up.
But you said it with conviction, so I like it. I, as far as I know, those are truth.
He has substantially less turnovers this year than he does... than he has in years past. All right, so we're through week 9. Mm-hmm. Like, we're through week 9, halfway through. They're 5-3. He's only got 5 interceptions on the year.
All right.
Like, compared to where he's been in years past,
sure.
That's pretty damn good.
Yeah, anytime you can...
He hasn't had one in 3 weeks.
That's fantastic. I was going to say, anytime you can keep it in single digits when you're talking about interceptions, you're going to win some ball games. So, good for him, good for you with the Jags.
The only games that he's thrown 2 interceptions was, you guessed it, the game I was there, and they got blown out by the Titans.
You think maybe he was distracted by the reflection of your body in the pool?
I mean, probably. I would be.
I would be,
I'd
too.
Fuck me in the pool. I'm very excited about our next guest. Anytime you can have a Medal of Honor recipient on. And I want to touch on, before we really go on, Flo's humility matches Kyle Carpenter's humility.
Yeah.
Just 2 guys that we've had on that are Medal of Honor recipients that are incredible, incredible human beings. I love talking to them because we got off with him, and he shared some more information.
Mm-hmm.
And he just didn't want us to, like, blow smoke up his ass or puff him up or anything like that. So I'm super excited for you guys to hear the interview. Here's Medal of Honor recipient, Army captain, and all-around good guy and good dad, Florent Groberg.
Authorized by Act of Congress, March 3rd, 1863,
has awarded in the name of Congress the Medal of Honor to Captain Florent A. Groberg, United States Army. Captain Florent A. Groberg distinguished himself by acts of gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty while serving as a personal security detachment commander for Task Force Mountain Warrior, 4th Infantry Brigade Combat Team, 4th Infantry Division, during combat operations against an armed enemy in Asadabad, Kunar Province, Afghanistan, on August 8, 2012. On that day, Captain Groberg was leading a dismounted movement consisting of several senior leaders, to include 2 brigade commanders, 2 battalion commanders, 2 command sergeants major, and an Afghanistan National Army Brigade commander. As they approached the provincial governor's compound, Captain Groberg observed an individual walking close to the formation. While the individual made an abrupt turn towards the formation, he noticed an abnormal bulge underneath the individual's clothing. Selflessly placing himself in front of one of the brigade commanders, Captain Groberg rushed forward, using his body to push the suspect away from the formation. Simultaneously, he ordered another member of the security detail to assist with removing the suspect. At this time, Captain Groberg confirmed the bulge was a suicide vest, and with complete disregard for his life, Captain Groberg again, with the assistance of the other member of the security detail, physically pushed the suicide bomber away from the formation. Upon falling, the suicide bomber detonated his explosive vest outside of the perimeter of the formation, killing 4 members of the formation and wounding numerous others. The blast from the first suicide bomb caused the suicide vest of a previously unnoticed second suicide bomber to detonate prematurely with minimal impact on the formation. Captain Groberg's immediate actions to push the first suicide bomber away from the formation significantly minimized the impact of the coordinated suicide bomber's attack on the formation, saving the lives of his comrades and several senior leaders. Captain Groberg's extraordinary heroism and selflessness above and beyond the call of duty at the risk of his life are in keeping with the highest traditions of the military service and reflect great credit upon himself, 4th Infantry Brigade Combat Team, 4th Infantry Division, and the United States Army.
Well, now on Zero Block 30, I have the privilege of welcoming our second Medal of Honor recipient that we've ever had on the show. You guys all really enjoyed hearing from Kyle Carpenter, who is a Marine. Now we have Captain Kahn's branch of service represented, and Florent Groberg. Captain Groberg, thank you so much for coming on Zero Block 30 and taking the time.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
So we first met you, I don't know if you remember, probably not, because you meet a lot of people who remember you, but when you wear that light blue medal around your neck, a lot of people remember when they meet you and not the other way around. We met you at the Army-Navy game this year, and that's such an incredible experience to be down on the field. When you go to places like that and you experience just the appreciation that people have for what you did on the days that you earned the Medal of Honor, how does that feel to you still?
Well, I think it's one of those very uncomfortable settings where you, specifically when you're in a crowd or in an environment with a lot of service members or veterans, and they've done incredible things themselves and throughout their career, and so that people recognize you for being what they call a hero is very uncomfortable. But it's something that, you know, they're excited to see you around, excited to shake hands or have a conversation with you, and so it means a lot to them, and you really represent the military, so... it's an honor, but honestly, it had me thinking a lot about what I want to do and how I want to represent myself. So I made a couple of changes in regards to wearing a medal.
Whenever you receive a medal like the Medal of Honor, so many times it becomes like the representation of who you are. And I'm sure you, as a man, you're so much more than just a Medal of Honor recipient. Do you ever feel like you want people to know who the real Flo is because you're not just the person who encompasses that medal?
So I don't really, like, honestly care what people think of me outside of, you know, my close circle and the people I work with and my family. But if there's a way that I think about the future, I think if anyone's going to ever remember me, and, you know, I don't care if people do or not, I mean, this shouldn't be ever of importance, but if they're ever going to remember me, they're going to say that, hey, you know, Flo was a great family man. He was really good at his profession. He took care of his community. He was just an all-around good dude. And in the end, by the way, he was also a Medal of Honor. So, yeah.
So you kind of want that to be – you want that to be the last thing that people mention about you.
Right. I think it's one of those things. When they put the medal on my neck, I realized that I was a courier. It didn't belong to me. It was a courier of the medal. It represents something that's way greater than I am, I'll ever be, or any human being single-handedly can do. But so I had a responsibility to earn it every single day and make sure that I honor my brothers and both our families, for which this medal represents. But I don't want to remember it as a no. I mean, you know, I want to remember it as a guy that did what he was supposed to do, and it was a good person.
Your path to the military was a little bit different than a lot of people. Explain why you wanted to become a soldier in the first place.
Yeah, so I wasn't born here. I was born in France, and my mom is French Algerian. So my uncle in 1993 was living in Algeria, which is North Africa, and a terrorist organization called the DIA decided to take over the government and influence their nation with radical Islamist thoughts and ideas. He was actually Muslim, and he was an imam. He was a preacher of Muslim faith, and he decided that to put the Quran down and go out there and pick up arms to go fight him. And on February 6, 1996, he was shot by the terrorist organization, and he was beheaded and dismembered. So, and sent back to my grandfather. So that was obviously a big moment in my life to really decide what I wanted to do in my life. And I wanted to make sure that I could avenge and revenge I wanted to avenge my uncle. And then obviously 9/11 was the other catalyst in my decision. So I was just naturalized a U.S. citizen in February of that year. And I figured at that point, there's no doubt in my mind I need to be serving this nation. I need to go out there and fight these people.
And you didn't go right into the army, correct?
No, because there was no war when I went into when I went to college. Mm-hmm. Literally a couple weeks into college. And then my father always had this, my father had this one rule. You know, he adopted me, gave me this one rule. He said, if I give you the name Grover, there's one responsibility, which is when you start something, you finish it. So that was a very tough decision for me at the time. Well, I wanted to quit school, obviously, and drop out and go enlist in the National Army, become an Army Ranger. But, he told me, he's like, hey, you do this now. I know that sounds like the right thing to do, but for the rest of your life, every time you start something, you're going to find a reason to quit. So you got a tough decision in front of you. And it's like, be patient, get your education, start and finish what you started, and go out there and serve your country.
So a lot of people, a lot of the listeners might not be familiar with your story about how you actually came about earning the Medal of Honor. Do you mind walking us through what happened?
Yeah, it's on August 8, 2012. I was in the eastern province of Kunar province in Afghanistan. I ran a specialized security detail for, at the time, Colonel Mingus. Now he's a two-star general. And I had a team of six individuals that highly selected folks. And that day, we decided to go to Kunar Provincial Security Meeting. This happened every Wednesday, and it actually happened for years. I remember my first one, 2009, 2010. It was conducting that meeting the exact same day, exact same time. So we'll figure that one out. But that day, when I landed at Camp Baez, which is about 1,100 meters outside of the compound where we're going to go for this meeting, the security I expected from the receiving unit wasn't there. They had decided to walk around 15 minutes prior and clear it and secure it. Well, you still got to accomplish the mission. So even though there was nobody there, my boss started walking towards the gate and, outside the wire to go to the meeting. So we had to improvise. And I had, at the time, two brigade commanders, two battalion commanders, an Afghan general, two star majors, one battalion and one brigade level, two GS-15 six departments, two majors, and then 60 thirds. So that's not helpful, but you drive on, and that's what we do in the military. You got to adapt and evolve, and so you push out, and I just change the things around, and I would usually put all the VIPs, which I had too many, in a diamond, and I position myself at the rear of the diamond, but in this case, I put myself at the rear so I could have better eyes on. We brought about 10, 12 KNA, and we put them up front because we really didn't trust them at the time. Way too many green on blues in that time period. But I knew that I needed to appear bigger, so I put them up front and I spread them out. I also took my two sergeant at the time, first class Frank, and I put him right behind the ANA so he can control the pace of movement. And we went out there. Within 700 meters, we went around this curve and through the straightaway. We're about to cross a bridge and right leading into these stairwells that was going to take us to the compound. Two motorcycles came at us. Real fast. Afghan National Army guy, point guy, actually did a really good job. He raised rifles, started shooting in Pashtun, and was forced to the motorcycle the first motorcycle to drop to the ground and it started running away. And the funniest thing I ever saw was the fact that the ANA guy by himself, no other guys on his team followed him, but he started sprinting after
him. Wow.
Yeah, and talk about like hero, right?
See,
yeah.
That's why that's the part where you need dogs. That's what I did, where you haul, release my dog and get him. And then you don't have to go. You just hang out, just watch the dog attack somebody, and then go get him when it's convenient for you. You needed some dog teams. That maybe nothing else happens if you had a dog team there.
I wonder if I caught up to him. But at the same time, yeah, kid came out. I mean, I say kid, he was 18 to 25. You can't tell over there, really. Came out of a structure to our left, and he started walking backwards, fell off to our patrol. I noticed him, so I started staring at him. And he did a 90-degree turn, and then he did a 180-degree turn. And then he did another 90-degree turn towards my patrol and started walking fast. And so I left my position and I ran towards him and yelled at him. He didn't give me an answer and even looked at me. So I got to him. I hit him with my rifle. And when I hit him with the rifle, I realized he had something in his chest. So I let go of my rifle, which bumped my kit, and I grabbed him by the chest. And, well, in my luck, I found out that, you know, I realized that he was wearing a suicide vest. So I just... You know, I just did whatever I could think of doing at the time, which was my job, which is take care of the boss, take care of my men, and I had to throw this guy away from the patrol and my boys as far away as possible, as quickly as possible. I threw him. Sergeant Mahoney followed me, my RTO. He was behind me at the time. And I looked at him. I said, bomb. Guy dropped to the ground, chest first, and then just saw him let go of the dead man's trigger. So he had a dead man's trigger. So I saw the trigger come out of his hand, and I'm proud of this. It's probably the proudest moment that I've had is the fact that my medic in his sworn statement wrote that the last thing he heard was LT's to fuck. So yeah. If I was going to go, at least that's the last word I had. I'm good with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I don't think it's any more appropriate. Like, I think that a lot of people say, oh, if you use the word fuck all the time, which I'm prone to do, they assume that it's not an intelligent phrase. Fuck that. Like, if you say fuck, sometimes it's the most appropriate word in the English language and any language, no matter what you speak. Fuck can be the most appropriate. And I think when you see somebody let go of a dead man trigger when they're wearing a suicide vest surrounding your men, I think fuck is the best word that you could possibly use.
Yeah, we won't fault you for it.
Yeah, no.
We actually encourage it.
Yep.
So after that, I mean, really, the story gets crazy because I landed.
Oh, that's when it gets crazy. Not the first part, but that's when it
gets
crazy.
Not the tackling the suicide bomber. That wasn't crazy.
That's the calm shit.
That's just doing our job. I mean, honestly, I think that you guys were out there, any of my boys, you would have been in the position I was in. That's what you do. I mean, people find it incredible, but, you know, we're trained to do so. And I think that love and brotherhood is just what really drives us to do some crazy, stupid shit sometimes. But yeah, I woke up 20 feet, you know, and I looked at myself. I mean, I was bleeding. I was propped up with my self pack. So I could see like my leg, my foot facing me, my tibia is out, there's blood everywhere. And I did what any man would do. And at that point, I kind of based a specific decision on whether or not I was going to die that day upon checking my ball.
Yep.
Everything was good to go.
Did you have your keys in your wallet too, sir?
Yeah. Squared away, and so I decided, okay, I'm not going to die today. But I couldn't feel anything. Unbelievable shock. I really played an incredible role in my survival that day. So I was able to check myself on internal wounds. Didn't find anything else. I had bones from the suicide bomber all over me. It was kind of nasty, but couldn't find my rifle. It took my pistol, made sure I had a round in the chamber, and then started dragging myself out. Sergeant Brink came out of nowhere, grabbed me by the handle of my kit carrier, dropped me into a ditch. A medic, Texas Valderrama, put on a tourniquet. He's got his fucking MCL, PCL, ACL, severe concussion, and he's saving my life. So then my boys came in. Another medic came in. So we had QRS that showed up real quick, brought me out of the ditch, and they told me that Modern War 6 was fine because of the colonel, and then but Modern War 7 was killed. Which I was like, nah, there's no way. So I told him to take me to his body, and when I got there, it was Command Sergeant Griffin, Major Gray, Major Kennedy, and State Department Reggie Abdel-Fat, that we're all in there and still in action. So, yeah, that was, I think that was one of the worst, if not, I mean, hands down, no doubt, that's the worst sight I've ever saw in my life. But what pissed me off right after that is something I will never forget. The fact that these, some bitches, fucking locals came out nowhere, obviously, congregated towards the blast. And then they were out there, like, one kid was again, like 1 year old, smiling like it was Christmas. And I had my dead body buddies, and so I still had my pistol in my hand, and I was literally going to shoot him in the head, but my 19-year-old PFC grabbed me by the arm, and he said, "Ain't worth it. Ain't worth it." So he saved that dude's life. He saved that dude's life. I would have been totally like, nothing would have happened to me. They would have. The lawyers would have claimed that I was still in shock.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Like, hey, I don't feel bad for feeling that way.
Okay. No, I mean, I think that that's a complete. I mean, if we always talk about, I think it's a pretty common thing amongst people who are married that you have a crime of passion.
Right.
I feel like that kind of situation is definitely a crime of passion. But it really goes to speak of the type of leadership that the military ingrains in people. When this young guy, 19 years old, probably no more than a specialist, looks at his captain who has so many injuries, he looks around and sees a lot of his leadership has been killed in action, but he has the intestinal fortitude to give you the instructions like, hey, sir, this isn't something that you want to do right now. It goes to small level leadership and how we teach our young people that they can make decisions as well and that the public can trust us whenever we're in those situations, because even though you were the captain in the situation, the PFC is there to restrain – he was there to restrain you a little bit too.
100%. I mean, he I wasn't thinking right. You know, I was just so angry. I mean, when you see your friends dead, you know, it's that worst thing. Everything that could be go wrong has gone wrong at that point. I mean, mm-hmm. that is the ultimate end state. Your friends are dead. And so, yeah, I mean, and anyone smiling, I mean, that's evil, man. That's right there. That's pure evil. And there's no way that kid can ever go back and feel like a human being, a proper human being after that. You smile. At them. I never smile. I mean, I've seen dead enemies on the ground. And maybe some of my peers have, and that's wrong personally. I personally have never smiled at a dead body. I just, you know, it's kind of like I might look at the body and say, fuck you, you know?
Right.
But I'm not.
Yeah. It's not a happy feeling.
No, you got to be. I think you got to be a little bit dead inside to smile at something that horrific.
Quote. Yeah, well, you're just, yeah, I mean, you're just so messed up.
Right.
You gotten to that point where, like, you can't even comprehend, you know, right or wrong anymore. And that's just, you've probably been in the suck too long.
Right. Yeah, you're numb to it. Which is unfortunate.
So you have this story, and you got medically retired a little while after that for, I assume, what is your injuries from that day.
Yeah.
You're on a book tour now. Tell us a little bit about your book and why that's important to you.
Yeah, so the book actually comes out November 7th.
Yeah, because when we knew we were going to have you on, I was so stoked to get it. I was like, yeah, I'm going to get it, and I go to Amazon. I'm like, motherfucking pre-order? Like, this is bullshit.
Order that thing. No, so it's called 8 Seconds of Courage because I find it funny. You know, my entire life, current life, where people like to consider me a hero, which I find ridiculous. But whatever, we'll call it whatever they want to call it. And it's based on 8 seconds, right? 8 seconds that changed so many different lives. My life, Griffin, Grace, Kennedy's, Reagan's, you know, Brinks, Balderrama's, Mahoney, Secor's, and, you know, everybody that was involved on that specific day. 8 seconds, man. That's why life is so precious. You never know what's going to happen, you know, within, you know, the next day. But man, if you really want to get into the nitty gritties, you don't know what's going to happen 15 minutes from now, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's nuts. So that thing, on that day was supposed to be an easy patrol. We've done it plenty of times. We never let them know when we're coming. We changed it. I might go 2 weeks in a row. I might not go for 6 weeks, right? But these fuckers are patient, and they will every week by week. They're willing to wait and kill you. 8 seconds takes chance. So I wanted to write a book, you know. For different reasons. I mean, one of the most important was to highlight, you know, the men and women that I serve with. I've always been amazed in awe of, like, who we serve with. I mean, we got a bunch of dumbasses, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, thank you for being genuine. We do have a bunch of idiots.
Soldiers are something else. You could write a book by itself on stupidities in garrison. I might get that next, but
please don't, because that's what our podcast is basically about.
Good. You should do it.
Yeah.
But the courage and the mindset, really, like that you've seen and the love from, you know, each other that you see in combat you can't replicate that anywhere, in my opinion. And so I wanted to write about that a little bit. I also wanted to write about my guys that didn't come home and why it's so important to highlight, you know, these individuals about who they are, like what they do, where they're from. That they're just regular, normal individuals who are really good people, you know, in their communities, well respected, you know, and they have kids and their wives. And just, it all ends like that. I want to write about them. I want their kids to be proud of their fathers. I want them, you know, when they get older and read about this and know that, you know, thousands of people have read about who their father is and what he's done and that he's never forgotten. He died for the, you know, a great reason, a great cause. He's just for us. You know, I don't care what you think of the war. I never regret a single day I spent over there, and I would deploy again today if they asked me to. And then the last piece I wanted to write is about, you know, opportunity, man. It's about seizing opportunities, understanding when you're lucky and you're given a good hand and take advantage of it. You will face adversity at all times, but it's about never giving up and about making something yourself. And really, it's about reminding people that this country really is the greatest country in the world. Yeah, do we have fault? 100%. Are we perfect? No way, not even near. But goodness gracious, you got a kid from the French love who wanted to write this. I'm going to use it. You know, kid from the ghetto of France who ends up, you know, on the same stage with the President of the United States.
Yeah, see, I think that a lot of people see France and they see, like, charcuterie plates and stuff like that. Like, but not everybody that lives in France is, like, hanging out under the Eiffel Tower with the, like, Ratatouille. Like, that's just not, like, how it's going down.
No shit. Yeah, that's a good movie.
Yeah, it is. All-time movie, yeah. Shout out to Remy. Shout out to Alfredo. Shout out to all of them.
So, I mean, you're talking about being on stage with the President of the United States. Obviously, you received your medal from President Obama. Who are some of the other people you've had an opportunity to meet and speak with that have impacted you and maybe influenced you since receiving the Medal of Honor?
I don't know. I mean, that's, since receiving the Medal of Honor, I've had an opportunity to meet so many different individuals. I'm not sure if there's a specific individual that I can really pinpoint. I mean, I thought Obama, many people don't like him or, you know, maybe as a president, but I'll tell you one thing. This man has been very influential in my life. He has called me. He has talked to me. He has given me advice. And he's just been a friend, which is weird to say from a president of the United States. Mm. It's really odd. I really respect the heck out of them, that man. But I don't know. I'm trying to think.
Well, I mean, that right there is a great answer, because not many people can say that a president of the United States is a friend, and even fewer can probably say that a president of the United States has influenced their life. And so I think you should consider yourself pretty lucky.
And I think that goes across multiple little areas, too, because there's Dakota Meyer, who's coming on the show pretty soon as well. His politics are obviously very different. He's outspoken that they're different than President Obama's. But I still think one of the iconic pictures of shows what the military is really about is the picture of them outside where President Obama and Dakota are drinking a beer together.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, that's a great picture. I just had Dakota here. I work at Boeing. I just had Dakota here, Sal Junta and Clint Romachet. And we did a panel. I was the moderator. That was awesome, man. That was a good time.
That really, your fraternity's small, but it's a pretty dope fraternity, I imagine, to be across. Like, do you ever go into the room and be like, which one is the biggest pussy of all the Medal of Honor winners, like, of recipients?
I know which one it is, but I'm not going to tell you.
That's fair.
I mean.
Yeah, that's, I'm going to this ball in Chicago, and Staff Sergeant Jones is supposed to be there, and Kyle Carpenter is supposed to be there. And I was telling one of my friends, I was like, man, it's been a long time since I felt like the biggest pussy in the room. I was like, I will no doubt feel that way when we do our podcast together.
Which ball is that? Are you going to
The one in Chicago? It's
USO.
I'm not sure off the top of my head.
Yeah, dude, Cal's awesome, man. Cal's a great guy. Him and I spent a little bit of time together at Walter Reed Hospital. I got a lot of respect for that kid. He's a smart kid. You know, he's graduated and about to graduate actually in December from USC. So he's good quality, man. He's good people.
All right, sir. Well, we appreciate you taking the time. We know you're a busy man. We were trying to get up with you yesterday in Washington, but glad that we got the opportunity to see you. And hopefully if you go to the Army-Navy game, we'll see you again this year because we'll be out there as well.
Ash, I'm supposed to be there in Philly. Is it what, 9th, right? Yeah,
9th. Yep, December 9th. Yep,
and he knows he's a West Point guy, so his whole life revolves around Army football. It's really pathetic.
Hey, by the way, you got to recognize me, but, you know, big nose and all that stuff. But I decided I'm no longer wearing my medal at these type of events. So
why is that?
I decided I'm done. I'm done the only time I'll wear my medal is when I have to be uniform with all the Medal of Honor recipients at an event sanctioned by the Medal of Honor Foundation and the Medal of Honor Society. Because, man, I don't – you know what? You and I, us three here, there's nothing different from each other, man. We just all had experiences in our lives. I guess someone wanted to recognize me for my specific experience, but that doesn't mean I need to go out there and boasting around with a medal around my neck, tell everyone, hey, look, for the Medal of Honor. People recognize me and they want to say thanks for your service. You know, we appreciate you being a recipient. Great. Other than that, I just want to be incognito, man. It's too much of a responsibility. It is such an honor. But it's something that, you know, you need to earn. And I don't want to be defied as a guy that wears the medal. I want to make sure that I earn it every day for my brother. So it stays at home unless I have to bring it. What I do, though, actually, when I go speak and at events, I don't wear it anymore, but I pass it around the crowd for people to look at it, touch it, with it, because it's America's jewel. And right. So
and why, there's a lot of different symbolisms all over it. A lot of people, if you're not a military person, you don't study military history, there's a lot of symbolism. Every single thing about the Medal of Honor means something. The number of stars, the number of points on the medal, like every single thing has a significant meaning, and it's pretty incredible to look at when you've never actually seen one in person.
Right, and it just makes me – so I'd rather people can – you know, I pass it around. I always say this. It's kind of funny. I'm sorry for my Marines, but it's a joke. I always do this. I'm like, hey, you know, I don't wear – I tell them the story why I don't wear it. I'm like, but I pass it around. The only thing I ask, if you're a Marine, please don't take it home with you. And but you know, cool. But yeah, I'm just honestly, I feel uncomfortable wearing it. I just don't feel like I deserve it. So, and that's and I don't care what anybody says to me. It's just the way it is. And not being humble is just being a realist.
No, yeah, but we admire that. We certainly admire that.
Humility across the board is one of the common traits amongst Medal of Honor recipients, and you embody that. So does Kyle. I mean, so does so many others. And we really appreciate you coming on the show today. And hopefully we'll get to – I'll recognize you with or without the medal and still give you the due respect. Thank you, sir.
Hey, appreciate it. Y'all going to have a great time with Dakota, man. He is a hoop, man. He is awesome. I love that kid.
I just hope he does – I mean, he tried to fight Dan Bazarian the other day. I hope he doesn't try to go to fisticuffs. It's been a long time since I've been in a tussle, but maybe we'll have to – throw some blows too.
Yeah, you might have to warm up or something. I don't know.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Huge shout out to Flo for coming on, man. What a great dude. What a great interview. What a great man. I'm happy to know him. And he's like going to hang out with us in New York and shit. Like, what a good dude.
Yeah. And we had a chance to already meet him. We met him last year, if you remember, at the Army Navy game, which was awesome. And he was a great guy then, too. And we were very appreciative for him coming on. And he actually just he just released a book that I encourage everyone to go buy.
Yeah, that book is called 8 Seconds of Courage. You can get it for as little as $12.50 on Amazon right now and Barnes & Noble. $12.50 for that story is going to be a good read. If you have a military member in your family or somebody who likes military history, that's a great book. We recommended Rob O'Neill's book, and a lot of people read that and really liked that. I am sure Flo's isn't going to be any different, and that was only released last week. So if you need a Christmas gift, it's Christmas season. It's in November. It's Christmas season. I would grab that book. If not, we're going to take a pause from Christmas season. It's Veterans Day weekend season. When you're in the military and you're out of the military, as a veteran, you get certain perks on that day. Like, I am pretty notorious about, like, if I'm buying something really expensive, I just throw it out there. Like, hey, dude, is there a better discount for this? Because sometimes there can be, like...
No shame.
Like, there's
I do the same thing, dude. I do the same thing.
There's a place called Freddy's that has, like, great hamburgers. They give you, like, 30% off, man. Like, if you don't get that, like, it's stupid. Like, you're wasting your money. Why not?
Yeah. And then there's places that will just give, like, 10% or here and there, and it's just worth asking. You know, it doesn't hurt.
Yeah, worth asking. I mean, if they have it, I don't agree with being like an asshole if they don't have it.
Right.
But if they have it, why not do it? I mean, it just makes sense.
Absolutely.
But there's several places that are pretty notorious about having some good old-fashioned free foods with long-ass lines with nothing but veterans standing up on a Veterans Day weekend. I think it's actually just Veterans Day. So we wanted to do, like, not really like a power rankings, but tell you some of our favorite spots that have these veterans benefits. Khan, you go first.
Okay, let's go one at a time. We'll start with breakfast. IHOP. You can get yourself.
You're making a whole day of it.
Oh, we're going breakfast, lunch, dinner, bro. We're going breakfast, lunch, dinner. We're going IHOP to start things. Get you a nice fat stack of pancakes.
Okay.
And start your day off right, because what is better on a cold November day than a warm stack of pancakes? And I come from Jersey, the land of diners. And I didn't really experience an IHOP till I got older, because we had all these great diners all over, littered all over New Jersey. Anybody from Jersey can tell you we are famous for our diners. But when it comes to chain restaurants for breakfast, I will say IHOP has their shit together, and I'd be happy to eat a stack of pancakes from IHOP, especially if I'm not paying for it.
I agree with that, with a caveat. You have to have chocolate chips inside the pancakes. Mm. I'm a huge chocolate chip pancakes. And tell me if you're ready for this.
Go.
Chocolate chip pancakes covered on the top with some peanut butter and syrup.
Yes. I will get down with that real hard. That is a great choice.
That's a great meal. All right, let's go on. I mean, there's really not a better one than IHOP for breakfast, so I'll stick there too. I mean, a Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, give it to me, bro.
Yep. Absolutely.
All right, so where are you going for lunch?
For lunch, it's Saturday, right? We got college football.
And they're for the boys. And people forget that.
People do sometimes forget that Saturdays are for the boys. Make sure you go to the Barstool store. You can find out a whole hell of a lot about Saturday being for the boys.
But free ads, even for Barstool.
But Veterans Day falls, college football season, and we are so lucky that it falls on a college football Saturday. I'm going to Applebee's, man. I'm going to Applebee's. Okay. With apps galore, and I'm getting my free veterans meal at Applebee's and watching some college football and drowning it with a ice-cold beverage.
All right. So I think that Applebee's is the one. There's an Applebee's right outside of the gates of Quantico that would have wrapped around lines. And this was a point that Connor and I wanted to make. Veterans, if you're listening, still tip, you cheap fucks. Like, still chip, man.
Yeah.
Like, it was... It's constantly Lance Corporals and below, E3s and below, very junior people who go out and they think that just because they're getting the meal for free that they don't tip the same amount. That server's still working for next at like $2.13. So take what the actual meal would be and give them the tip. Or if you want to pay it forward and be a nice guy, give them the price of the meal that you got and use that as a tip. So they get a little something too. You get a free meal. It's still going to be cheaper than if you had to do like the complete paying for it. It's not going to be $11 plus the four or whatever that you would tip. You could just give them $11 and that would make nice. If you're a senior guy, I'm not asking junior people to do that. If you're a more senior person, because you know good and damn well some of your troops aren't going to be, and those people should not be going home with less money in their pockets after working a long ass day because you're taking advantage of it.
Yeah, come on, Private. Come on, Private.
Yeah, seriously.
get your shit together.
And Gunny. There's a fucking random Gunny out there doing that shit, too. Mm-hmm. You cheap fucks.
Yeah, absolutely. All right,
add more money to your thrift-saving plan. Smart, but come on, dude. Don't be so cheap. I'm not going to go to Applebee's, though.
Where are you going?
I'm going to go Denny's. I'm going to hit up two breakfasts. Do the two breakfast day.
Breakfast is good no matter what time of day. And I won't hear any different.
Yeah, I'm going to go to breakfast day, go to Denny's, and get a little Denny's meal because you can get the Grand Slam at any time, too.
All right, I like that.
For dinner, where are you headed?
Well, before I even get to dinner, I'm going to need a little stop off to give me a little boost before I get to dinner.
Mm.
So we all know that America runs on Dunkin', Barstool runs on Dunkin'. I'm going to Dunkin' Donuts and getting myself free coffee and a donut so I can have
Hopefully it's going
to
be a cold brew and you... Tweet it out with the hashtag Viva La Duncan.
Boom. Viva La Duncan. And I'm going to give myself that little boost so I can go into dinner strong. And I'm going to finish dinner at Chili's with some baby back ribs.
I don't mind that move at all.
Chili's, baby back ribs.
I'm probably not everything's free now. Like, don't think that you can go to all these places and every single thing's going to be free. They're going to have like a specific menu because they have to have enough in there. But if you want to have a little bit money in your pocket, I would suggest going on MyBookie and making some bets where you can make some money because holiday cash, you're going to need it. MyBookie is the place to score some serious cash on your sports predictions. Believe it or not, the holidays are just around the corner. We've already talked about that it's fucking Christmas season in this bitch. Where you bet is just as important as what you're betting on. And if you want to make money betting all the games, you got to use MyBookie.ag. They're the only site I recommend. I trust them. You don't have to take my word for it. Check it out for yourself. They have odds on every single matchup. This week, I would bet heavily on my beloved Jaguars, who are playing at home. The defense is riding high, only giving up 7 points in the last 8 quarters, which is pretty incredible. Use the promo code ZERO to activate your offer. That'll give you a 50% bonus. Visit mybookie.ag today. You win, you play, you get paid. I, for dinner, because I'm a Texas guy, I'm going to the Texas Roadhouse.
There you go.
It's very important whenever you have a good meal. I will go to a place that has substandard food if they have above standard bread that comes to the table.
I'll tell you what, that is a great point. Very good point, because bread can make or break you.
If you go to Texas Roadhouse, listen up. Brendan, step up, ass up to the microphone. Listen up. This is for the young bucks out there. If you have, when they bring out those basket of rolls, which are fucking delicious, ask them to bring out a little bit of ground cinnamon to put on the rolls too.
Ooh.
Ground cinnamon and the butter, mix it up, throw that on there. Now you have yourself a free dessert, my friend.
This is specifically Texas Roadhouse?
Any place that has really good quality bread, you can do that, because cinnamon butter added on bread is a money shot. Like, it's a free dessert that they're already having out. It works at places like Cracker Barrel, where you can also have the apple butter, which is delicious.
Okay, I am going to do that, and when I do that, I will take a picture. I will tweet it at you. You can retweet it, and now everybody can see it.
There we go.
Good move.
Now we're working for the whole damn family. So those are the places that we would go. There's also other places that you can get ones like, we want to shout them all out, like the national chains, where I obviously can't do the local chains, but Olive Garden, Chili's, Denny's, Red Lobster, TGI Fridays, Texas Roadhouse, Red Robin's, Longhorn Steakhouse, IHOP, Outback Steakhouse, BJ's the Restaurant, which is a great place to go. I have one like right by my house, and Carrabba's. So there's lots of places that if you're a veteran, you can go. Take your veteran family member there. Tell them that you're going to treat them. They'll probably forget that it's a free meal. And then you walk in and be like, oh, this lunch that I was going to treat you to for Veterans Day, so half off because yours is free. What a coincidence.
You know which one really surprised me? I was looking on a list yesterday. Did you know you can go to IKEA and get a free meal as a veteran? So, you know, you want to shop.
Those Swedish meatballs are no joke, dude.
That's what I'm saying. If you want to get, you know, a dresser that is going to drive you up the wall to put together, but you want to get some Swedish meatballs, head your ass over to IKEA and take advantage.
Also, Golden Corral, Smoky Bones. I mean, there's tons. KFC gives you free shit. Like, there's tons of places. Take advantage of it.
Absolutely.
Well, I can't wait to be back next week. We are going to have some big shit coming down next week, too. Some good interviews. I want to talk a little bit about Saudi Arabia because nobody, like, really knows what's going on in that situation. Also want to get into a little bit of Al-Shabaab soon, like, and talk about what the terrorist cell unit Al-Shabaab is all about. We're going to be tackling some of those bigger subjects soon. But any save rounds alibis this week, Con?
Yes, I do. And I would be remiss if I didn't make mention of what you said to open the episode this week. Way back when we first started this show and you and I were starting to get to know one another, and I opened up a little bit, and you took the time to say something to me, and I want to do that now. I have to commend you, chaps, to, one, write a lengthy, detailed blog, but then also to take it upon yourself to open our episode and explain what happened to you in your life and explain the lifestyle changes you'd like to make and your remorse. I think that took so much courage, because oftentimes people will run from their problems. And, you know, it's cliche to say, but the saying goes that the hardest part of fixing a problem is admitting that you do in fact have a problem. And I'm not saying, I don't believe it, you know, you have a problem, but you have identified something in your life that you would like to make a change about, and I think that's fantastic, and I couldn't be more proud of you. And I want you to know that I hopefully speak for all of our listeners when I say I stand behind you, pal. I support you in any choice. My opinion of you has not wavered. I still think you're a very good man, and you have done a lot of great things, both for our listeners and for some other folks. And you're my battle. You're my battle buddy, man. And I'd be proud to share a foxhole with you any day of the week, buddy. So, again, I commend you, and I'm happy you're here with us.
I appreciate that, man. I'm just trying to make the best decision and the best impact that I can at this point. Like, there's nothing. I would love nothing more than to go back 6 years ago and change that and not put any. And not do that. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't have done that again. And I feel awful about it. But I want to also tell the listeners that this is not going to be something that I talk about. It's not going to be a recurring theme, just like it wouldn't be if you had something terrible go on in your life or that something the worst thing that you've ever done in your life. You're not going to go back and continuously bring it up. I am going to move past it. I would love to forget it, but it's not something that I'll ever forget. It'll be emblazoned on my mind that I made a mistake that grave one time. And it should have been zero, but it was one time, and I want to own it, and I am honest about it. Like, I would have never said something about it if it didn't come up, because it's embarrassing, and I regret it, and no one wants to bring up their regrets. But all I can do is move forward, so that's what I'm going to try to do.
Right, and the bigger mistake would be if you didn't decide to make some changes as a result, and you've done that, so I think that is also why I think it is very commendable what you're doing, so...
Reason why I had stopped drinking before, I listened back to what I said, and the reason why I stopped drinking before is because I was angry and I thought that the alcohol had exacerbated those anger issues. Mm-hmm. Once I stopped drinking and started getting treatment for my anger issues, my PTSD-related anger issues, I started drinking again, and I was still happy. Like, I think that alcohol really does exacerbate the person that you are. If you're an angry person, you're going to be an angry drunk. If you're a sad person, you're going to be a sad drunk. I'm genuinely a happy guy now. Like, I'm a really happy guy. So when I drink, people have fun around me. And I've never met anybody except for that one time who was nervous about being around me when I was drunk. But I can't allow that type of thing, because I did see that I asked my wife. She's like, you are kind of an asshole on Twitter whenever you're drunk. And I was worried that that type of personality was coming back. So in order to nip that in the bud, I'm going to stop drinking. I mean, that's that.
That's that. So, and, you know, I think it's another good thing you brought more attention to the fact that veterans do need help when it comes to PTSD and getting mental health care. And, you know, that plays right into the event that I have with Operation Heal Our Heroes at the end of this year, December 1st. And thank you so much for everybody that's continued to support my endeavor there to raise money to help get a veteran's free mental health care for the rest of his life. So thank you very much. I can't thank you guys enough, seriously. But yeah, chaps, I mean, I think it was important that you told your story, and I think more good will come of that from now than had you not shared it. I know it was very tough, that maybe not necessarily the manner in which you wanted to share it, but
I never wanted to share it.
Yeah,
like,
no, I know.
I made a mistake about that. Like,
yeah,
and
believe
me. I'm fully out and honest about who the fuck would.
I mean,
like, when people are like, yeah, he didn't say anything until it came out. Of course not, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, a fucking course not.
Yeah.
For the last time, I am very sorry for my actions. I don't blame it on anything. I don't blame it on alcohol. I don't blame it on PTSD. I blame it upon myself and my own poor decisions. And that's that. And that's the last time I'm going to talk about it. Sound the retreat.